We hope you enjoy the following presentation of The Cycles of Life, Part 1, by Dane Rudyar. This recording is 29 minutes long. This audio is brought to you by RITA, the Rudyar Institute for Transpersonal Activity, a nonprofit public benefit corporation dedicated to disseminating the work and essential message of Dane Rudyar. All material is copyrighted by Leila Rudyar Hill. If you'd like to learn more about RITA, or make a donation towards supporting the ongoing legacy of Dane Rudyar, visit www.rudyarinstitute.org. For the complete selection of free downloads of audio presentations by Dane Rudyar, visit www.rudyaraudioarchives.com. And now, Dane Rudyar.
We speak all the time of a new age, of new man, of new mind, new groups, and so on. But we sometimes fail to realize that we really need a new foundation or some basic foundation, some basic premise, something very definite on which we can establish the foundation for this new mind, this new age, this new type of human being. I think if we want to establish anything solid on an existential, on a real basis for our life, for the feeling of being alive, of being conscious and all that, what we probably find as the most important fact of life, of existence, is that all life is, as it were, based on the operation of two opposite trends in constant dynamic interrelationship and interdependence. Now, this concept that there are two basic trends in any form of existence, wherever there is life, wherever there is existence, there is polarity. Polarity is not something which is secondary to existence. It is the very basis of existence. And it is also the basis on which we can get a clean understanding of what cycles mean. You see, you cannot think, you cannot feel, you cannot act unless you imply not only that an I am, but also an other, something which stands in relation to you, something which stands, in a sense, in opposition to you. Whether it is a person or a force or a trend, there is always that interplay and interdependence between two factors which are polar opposites. And I think it is usually better to think of opposite trends rather than, as some people often say, opposite forces or powers. Because when you deal with trends, you are dealing with processes. And I think one of the most characteristic features of our present attitude to philosophy and to life in general, which is probably one of the characteristics of the New Age, is that we have to replace the concept of set static entity with that of flowing processes, which are phases which are definite and which repeat itself into a cyclic pattern. When you are dealing with action, sometimes it is almost essential that you think in terms of opposite forces or opposite principles. You are faced with two positions which are in opposition to each other, and in acting you have to establish contrast. But if you are dealing with philosophy, if you are trying to get at a metaphysical understanding of existence, also as a really essential understanding of what is at the root of all life, then you have rather to think of them into trends, into motions of which are complementary, but which at every moment of time and space, every point of space, are interrelated in contrast to one another. Now, of course, you are all familiar, I'm sure, with the Chinese idea of the yin and the yang, which are integrated into that very well-known and famous figure, the Tai Chi, which is the subject on which the I Ching, and any other book of Chinese philosophy are based. These are probably the most ancient and the most well-known today expression of that duality of life. But we find that everywhere in any civilization, in every society, under one name or another. And I don't really want today to discuss anything about the Chinese philosophy, because I do not feel that I am too much of a student of it or scholar about it, but rather to bring you perhaps a deeper awareness of how this interplay between opposite forces or opposite trends is being used in astrological interpretation and in the cycles which we use in astrological knowledge. Now, as long as you have two forces or two trends which are interrelated, so that one waxes while the other wanes, and later on the other waxes and the first one wanes, the moment you have that, you have what we might call a cycle. Now, there is an extraordinary misunderstanding in the part of so many Western thinkers about the concept of cycles. Unfortunately, Nietzsche popularized the idea of cyclic eternal return. And whenever you speak to an intellectual about a cycle, immediately they think of Nietzsche. And they say, oh, well, do you mean to say that everything always repeats itself? Now, the great confusion, which I find very prevalent, in fact, which is very difficult to eradicate, is the confusion between two things which are very different: the principle of structure and the principle of contents. Now, a cycle is a structural factor. The cycle does not tell you about what is happening inside of it or during it. The cycle is merely a measure of time. It's like the cycle that's made by the hands of the clock turning around the face of the clock. Or it is the measure of what happened when the earth turned around the sun in 1 year period, and you have the seasonal change in between the seasons. Now, spring will return, but not the same plants will appear which were there in the previous year. That is to say, the very substance of the things, the events, the exact shape of the plant, the trees, the leaves, the material which are exactly implied in the life of the plant, all those things change every year. Nothing ever repeats itself exactly, because if you begin to say that, like Nietzsche tried to say, you are just immediately limiting the infinite possibility of existence, and you get at a picture of a universe, or of a God, if you want to put it that way, which, instead of being an infinite potentiality of solutions to the problem of existence, for some mysterious reason is limited to a particular set of possibility, however innumerable and immense that set of possibility may be. Now, there are a very basic form. The form of the rose remains from 1 year to another. What you might call there, if you want, the archetypal form, the structure of that rose. But the actual substance, which is implied, which is inherent in, which is giving substance to that form, to that archetypal pattern, is something which is always new things. So that, in a certain sense, you have to be very careful when you speak to somebody of cycles, to make sure that you mean, you imply a very great difference between structural factor and contents, existential contents, you see. There is, I have no time now to tell that, but there are two kinds of knowledge. There is structural knowledge and there is existential knowledge. Existential knowledge deal with the facts, the everyday facts of life, the things that happen, the events of life. But the structural knowledge deal is a knowledge of those patterns of changes, the way the phases of a complete cycle of existence, or many cycles of existence, follow one another in a definite pattern or series in time. We are dealing there in a cycle with whole of time, just like when you deal with an organism or a planet or a solar system, you are dealing with a whole in space. And the principle of wholeness is the most important principle and on which I base particularly my whole philosophy of existence. So that both space and time are different manifestation of the principle of wholeness. Anything which live is a whole. All what we are dealing with is constantly wholes of existence, existential system of activities which are related to another and interrelated so that they are interdependent upon each other. Now, the moment you are dealing with this principle of wholeness in operation of life, the interchange between those great polarities of life, you are dealing there, you see, with problems which become very easily solved if you are making that distinction between structure and content. Let me just say something to make the things perhaps clearer. We have all been hypnotized in the Western world by the concept of free will and determinism. Whole of Europe has been hung up with the concept of what do you believe in, free will or determinism. Every society, for some mysterious reason, is always mixed up about a particular problem, which is always a false problem, which is very amusing things. You see, take, for instance, India. Well, the whole problem which has bothered all Indian philosophers for centuries is the problem of liberation and bondage. Or if you want to put it, nirvana, liberation, freedom, mukti, and bondage, or samsara. Well, everybody has been there. What do you do about those two things? And yet, of course, the realization, which you find in all the great masters of India and particularly in Zen Buddhism, is that samsara and nirvana are one, that there is no opposition, that the two are constantly interrelated, that you are always a little more bound or a little less free or a little more free, so that freedom and bondage are waxing and waning, just like any polarities is waxing and waning and waning within a particular cycle of existence, you see. It is the same thing with the idea of reincarnation, which perhaps when I come back in May, I might take over as a subject of talk. I mean, do you mean that that they are the events of a life, the personality of an event, the physical, substantial, mental nature of a person which reincarnates? Or is it rather than the structural factors which are in a life, which are reproduced in a different way in a new life, so that you have a pattern of development of structural processes? This is perhaps a little abstract, but nevertheless, it is something which I think we find extremely valuable the moment you begin to think about it. Now, in America, for instance, we have the great dilemma of individual rights for the individual person and total productivity or business at full steam ahead, and the two being more or less in contrast to one another, because if you have absolutely individual right, it is very difficult to have total maximum productivity. So you try to have maximum productivity by putting the individual rights more or less in the background. But those two things, the individual values and the collective values, are always in opposite to each other. And there is always a little more of the individual factor, a little more or less of the collective factors. And all life is an expression of the interrelationship between those two factors. The possibility of relationship is infinite in the existence. But still, at the beginning of any cycle of existence, a certain definite structure is established which control the whole field of existence. It is what the Greek thinker thought of as the logos, the Logos, the Word, which is in the beginning, establish a certain structure for the whole cycle. But within that structure, all sorts of possibilities of events develop, and we have therefore freedom in terms of relationship, but we have structural patterns which define what we are as essentially as a self. And that problem of the relationship between individual selfhood and relatedness is very important and very basic if you try to understand the problem of cycle and life in general. Now, in astrology, we are dealing with various kind of cycles. You have the cycles of the season, you have the cycles of the lunation, the moon and the relationship between the moon and the sun. All those cycles can be divided essentially into two parts or two hemicycles. You have the cycle which starts from the beginning of a cycle, the half cycle which begins with the beginning of the cycle up to the middle of that cycle, and then you have the second part of the cycle, and each one of those two hemicycles has a very definite meaning. And I think we cannot understand the cycles of life if we don't understand that those two parts of the cycle, the two half of the cycle, are really definitely contrasting in their characters. You know, there is the alpha and the omega. Alpha is the beginning and omega is the end of the cycle. And interestingly, there is in the middle that letter mu, M, you know, which curiously enough, if you translate those letters into American, in English language, or Latin language rather, you have A-M-O, amo, which means I love, which is a rather interesting pattern for a cyclic process, as you see. The point is that the first part of a cycle is essentially a cycle, a part, which deal with instinctual action. A power is released at the beginning of a cycle, which grows and develops to a point of more a bottom of the cycle, or in some cases, in the case of the lunation cycle, to a point of fulfillment in the full moon. But during that first cycle, what is prevalent, what is predominant, is action, activity. You start from a certain basic impulse, which is essentially unconscious, which operates in the dark of compulsive instinct. You begin not as a conscious being, but you begin as a tremendous ball of potentiality actually releasing itself gradually as you go on. And the first part of the cycle, therefore, is essentially a cycle of activity. And that activity tends always, especially at first, to be compulsive, to be instinctual, to be emotional. So that's why, for instance, if you are born at the beginning of a cycle, like the new moon cycle, we'll see that in a moment, there tends to be a tremendous amount of subjectivity, great energy, great impulsions, and sometimes a great deal of emotional confusion, because everything is there, so potential, and yet nothing is yet achieved, nothing is yet realized. Everything is still in the future. So that the beginning of an age, the beginning of a cycle, is always somewhat compulsive, and it is in the hands of people who act as apostles or avatars and so on, who are essentially men who act, who through their actions are exemplars for the humanity that will follow on. In the contrary, when you reach the point, the second part of the cycle, the middle of the cycle, then you start the hemicycle, the half cycle of consciousness. What was action and activity in the first part of the cycle becomes consciousness in the end, in the second part of the cycle. You develop consciousness through the forms which have been built through the activity during the first half of the cycle. Out of those forms, out of those institutions, if you are dealing with a society, a certain type of awareness of reality, certain basic symbols, a language, a pattern of response to everyday life is built, and within, out of those patterns, those forms, there emerge gradually a type of consciousness. So that the second part of his cycle deal with the problem of consciousness, with the spread of consciousness, with the development of consciousness. And it is a conscious factor which is predominant there, whereas in the first part of his cycle it was essentially an actional factor and essentially based on unconscious motivation, or motivation which little by little become more conscious, but which at first were rather compulsive. Now, in astrology, we have two very definite kind of cycles. There are what you might call cycles of positions, and there are cycles of relationship. Now, for instance, when you deal with the year, you take the sun, which reaches a certain point, the apparent sun, which reaches a certain point at the spring equinox. There it is in relation to it has reached the point where the two planes of the equator and the ecliptics cross. We are there, the spring equinox, and the year extends from the spring equinox to the fall equinox and again to the spring equinox. We are only dealing there with one factor which is moving. Actually, of course, it's the Earth, but from the geocentric point of view, it is the sun which is moving. So that we see all the motion of the sun through a very definite cycle. It is a cycle of position, because we are dealing with one factor which changes position in relation to what seems to be, at least which is taken as, a fixed beginning of the cycle. In the contrary, when you are dealing with the lunation cycle, the cycle of which extends from one new moon to another new moon, you have two factors there. You have the sun and you have the moon, and both are moving at the same time. One is moving much faster than the other, and therefore there is a certain time which repeats itself between two successive new moons, which is about 1 month. Now, this cycle is very interesting because it projects itself, as it were, in the sky in the shape of the moon. Now, what you call the phases of the moon are not really phases of the moon at all. The moon is still the same all the time. But what is changing is the relationship between the sun and the moon as seen from the point of view of the Earth. So that you have the new moon, and you have the crescent moon, the first quarter moon, the gibbous moon, you have the full moon, you have the moon again come back in a different way, again to the last quarter, and the crescent moon inverted, and then again the new moon. You have there a series of phases which have a very interesting graphic representation in the sky by the change of countenance of the moon. But it is, as I say, and please don't try to forget that, it is a solely lunar cycle, and it is not a lunar cycle. So that you are dealing there with something which involves two moving factors, whereas when you deal with the year, you are dealing only with one moving factor, the sun. Now, let us for a moment speak of the cycle of the year. In my book, The Pulse of Life, I speak of two forces, or two trends. For simplicity's sake, I call it as two forces, the day force and the night force. Now, what we have there is really exactly the same thing that we have in the yin-yang, or it should be the yang-yin pattern in Chinese philosophy. The day force is the yang power of the masculine power, and the yin force is the feminine power, or light and darkness, or sun and moon, or any kind of duality of that type. Now, the way I interpret those, the day force and the night force, is in this way. At the equinox, the day force and the night force are equal. That is to say, the days and the nights are of equal length. That's why you call them equinox, equal nights, you see. But at the solstice, one of the two forces is far more predominant than the other. In the summer solstice, which is around the 22nd or 21st of June, the day force is all dominant, yang is dominant, the sun is maximum power, it stands still in northern declination, the sunset occurs as far north as it can be, and then gradually the days become less long and the night increase. Then in the fall equinox, you have again an equal night and days. But now it is the nights which are increasing and the days are decreasing until at the winter solstice you have the shorter days and the longer night. Now the point is, if to interpret as it were those two forces, the day force and the night force, in a way which would be consonant with the emphasis that is going on today in the world on psychology and the development of the individual and society. Because, as I said a moment ago, especially in America, but also all in the Western world, one of the great hang-ups is the problem of the relationship between the individual and the collective. How much the individual would be free is an end in itself. How much, on the other hand, the collectivity, the community, the state is the important thing, you see. Now, at the they usually start the year at the vernal equinox, because in the northern hemisphere it is the beginning of life in form. The vegetation supposedly begins. You have spring, and as we like very much to see life going on rather than death, we think that it is the normal beginning of the year, at least from the point of view of nature. That is to say, at that time, you see, the two forces are equal, but the day force is increasing. Now, what do I mean by day force? I spoke of it in my book, The Pulse of Life, and other places, as the principle of individualization. That is to say, the trend which tend to bring out an individual person which is a whole in itself, self-sufficient, self-contained, you see. Now, this is, of course, what an individual person is. It is a whole of life. It is a human entity which is in itself whole, self-contained, and relatively independent. Now, during the spring months, you see, that which started as a great impulse of renewal out of the chaotic substance of the past is trying to bring up that integrated whole, the human person. It is the principle of individualization. All the elements of the past are being integrated into a particular person with a particular name, a particular foundation in itself. And at the summer solstice, the day force is at the maximum, and then you have there the person. You have that force, that being which is contained in itself. It refers also to the home, and it refers also to the home as in the fact that a person is never completely sufficient to itself, so that even there, at that point where you have the maximum of individualization in the sign Cancer, still there is the other, the husband or the wife, which is there to already begin the new phase of life, which is then the beginning of the development of the night force, which is the force to collectivation, the principle of collectivation, the power which is trying to bring together all sorts of definite individual and bring them into a community with a definite culture, definite language, definite symbols, and so on. So you have the spring months, you see, Aries, Taurus, and Gemini, which refer to the gradual process of individualization. In Aries, it is the great impetus to be, to function, to be the outlet for some great cosmic force, the will to be, if you want. In Taurus, you have the substantial, contrasting force of trying to make that concrete, that energy concrete. Aries is the power. There are three kinds of motion. There is the motion that goes straight forward, which is the Aries, and there is the, or what they call cardinal sign in astrology. Then there is in Taurus, you have the circular motion, which then try to establish a whirlpool and a set definite limit through energies and so on. And then you have in Gemini the third force, which is the spiral force, which is a combination of the straight motion and whirlpool motion, which then represent the mind, intelligence, the capacity to adjust to life, and the capacity to build consciousness out of the experience of everyday life.
This is the end of The Cycles of Life, Part 1, by Dane Rudyard. The preceding audio is copyrighted by Leila Rudyard Hill and was brought to you by Rita, the Rudyard Institute for Transpersonal Activity. Learn more about Rita or contribute to the ongoing legacy of Dane Rudyard at www.rudyardinstitute.org. For the complete selection of free downloads of audio presentations by Dane Rudyard, visit www.rudyardaudioarchives.com.